Good afternoon and welcome everyone to the LaRouche Show. This is July 1st, 2006 on Saturday. My name is Marcia Mary Baker, and I'm with the Economics Section of Executive Intelligence Review News Service. And today we have several live guests on this 4th of July holiday weekend in the United States to discuss the emergency situation of the country, because it's anything but politics as usual or holiday as usual. At present, Congress has recessed for the 4th of July week, and they will be returning around the July 9th or 10th. And we are going to have a report and updates on the effort underway, the be-all and end-all battle we have, to force the attention by Congress on the fact of the industrial takedown of the country has reached the stage where something has to be done now, not November, not next year, or the very existence of the United States as a modern industrial nation is, that's what's at stake, and we will cease to exist if something isn't done. Now, I will mention and then welcome our guests in a minute, but our topic today is who is destroying America, who is bankrupting America, who is carrying out what we see underway in the mass shutdown in our automotive industrial sector, in the manufacturing base. And I'll say just off the bat a couple of things about what Mr. LaRouche is doing before I introduce people. He has been in Berlin attending meetings there with diplomats and also with representatives of nations from Europe, Russia, from Southeast Asia, from elsewhere, about the on his strategic evaluation of the international financial and economic situation. And in the meantime, the LaRouche Political Action Committee, in the last 48 hours, has printed a white paper in the number of 50,000 copies on the title, Who is Bankrupting America? It's called Felix Rohatyn's Al-Qaeda Destroyed American Industry. And so the people involved in the research team putting out this expose of Mr. Felix Rohatyn, who has presented himself for decades as part of the Democratic Party in the United States, are here with us in the studio along with LaRouche Youth Movement members. We have Paul Gallagher. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you, Marcia.
And hi. Tony Papert.
Hi.
And this dossier, making this clear to people that we're up against those who would deliberately destroy America, and they connect back to literal fascism of the past, to Nazi networks at the time of the Second World War, organizing around this to make this clear to people who we have the LaRouche Youth Movement representatives here with us in the studio. We welcome Scott Mooney. Hi.
Hello, Marcia.
Who has been directly involved in the newly set up war room to bring pressure to bear on Congress to take the kind of action I was just describing, emergency action to intervene to stop this liquidation of the auto machine tool sector. Now, Scott will tell us in a bit, he's been the liaison to some organizing in the upper Midwestern states of Indiana and Ohio by a LaRouche Youth Movement team. It was in the Ohio Valley. I think they may be recovering from that right now. But also in Texas, in the Western Texas agricultural region, there has been an organizing foray. And we have on the line Joe Rye Fugate from – you may be in Houston. Are you there, Joe Rye?
Hello. Yeah, currently still traveling on my way to Houston.
Oh, great.
San Antonio.
So you've been in Lubbock and many other places, right?
Yes.
So we wanted to take all this during this hour – in the following order. What I'd like to do is have Paul Gallagher open things up in terms of the fact that, I'll use Mr. LaRouche's phrase from June 22nd, time is running out. And in terms of congressional action, they have a few more weeks of this session, but it's no lobbying as usual. Why don't you describe the situation, Paul?
In a meeting yesterday with an aide to a senator, we told him that if the Congress waited until the spring of next year to take action on protecting and retooling the auto capacity in the United States, that that would be far too late, that they would have wasted their time, and got a very concerned, to say the least, reaction to that timetable. But that's generous. The crisis in the auto sector is definitely getting worse. A series of unexpected developments are making it progress at a and making the sector shrink at a much faster pace than anyone, any common commentators had expected. We have to remember that a year and a half ago now, Lyndon LaRouche said the auto sector in the U.S. was in crisis, in a debt crisis, and would have to be saved soon or it would implode. No one else has believed this, but there's a series of developments which have really made this crisis much, much worse. I focus on the disappearance of 70,000 workers, which is underway this quarter of the year, from the industry. Many people have heard of the so-called retirement buyouts that have been offered by General Motors Ford and by General Motors to Delphi employees also, but don't realize that by combining those with the clear intention to shut down nearly 70 plants, these companies have caused the majority of the workers in those plants, in many of those plants, literally more than half of the entire workforce, to retire, to take a certain lump sum payment and retire. And those retirements are effective immediately. The longest that any of those workers will still be at their jobs is the end of this year, and most of them will be gone before the end of this summer. That means that the shrinkage of the sector, if we go back to the first white papers that we published on this crisis at the beginning of this year, when we listed 67 plants, major plants, that were scheduled to close just by the four biggest auto companies, and we said that they were planning to close these plants by 2008 at the latest. What the development around the buyouts actually means is that by driving this process, by announcing the closings and then sweeping workers out with these lump sum payments, these four automakers, General Motors, Ford, Visteon, and Delphi, have in effect closed those plants in a matter of months. They have removed the workforce, or the majority of the workforce, from those plants in a matter of months. They've hired a few, they're hiring now a few temporary workers for a very unstable maintenance of those plants for perhaps a few more months to early next year, and then they will all be closed. And that is, as we said at the time, 75 million square feet of capacity represented by those plants. In terms of the spin-off jobs generated by the work of that workforce, it's not 75,000, but rather 300,000 jobs in the auto sector as a whole, which will be lost in that process. It's taking months rather than a few years. And remember that this shutdown, even if it had taken 2006, 7, and 8, would have been a greater shutdown than in the entire previous 30 years in the auto sector. And so in many places, in Genesee County, for example, which has six or seven plants closing, and this includes Flint in Michigan, more than 45% of all of the workforce at those seven plants has retired just in a period of a little under 2 months, and the retirements are still going on. So this is simply knocking the capacity out. With developments like this kind, the good news is that we've been able to get out, finally, the ammunition naming those responsible for this crisis moving as fast as it is, focusing on Felix Rowett and the networks of Lazard Bank and the way in which they have set up, with Rowett personally planning the Delphi bankruptcy, the way that they have set up this rapid implosion. But in terms of the way Congress is behaving, Congress is effectively asleep on this. And there was a meeting of the manufacturing caucus, so-called, of the Senate two days ago, at which the LaRouche youth movement made a very effective intervention, reminding these members of the Senate that, in fact, in order to get to any salvation of industry, especially the auto industry, they had to start by repudiating Felix Rowett and eliminating his influence in the Democratic Party and on their thinking. And the good news is that that process is the way to the legislation that we that LaRouche outlined many months ago. So I'd say that's the most important of the signs of how rapidly this is going. There are others. There's the news that began to break yesterday of a possible takeover of General Motors management by another similar fascist known as the cost killer, Carlos Ghosn, who is the current chief of both Renault and Nissan automakers. This is an attempt to force GM to merge with those companies and put Ghosn in charge of it, which would result in the elimination of its productive capability and its workforce here even faster than is now going on. But the evidence I've already described is sufficient to indicate how fast this is going.
So this is end-of-the-line globalization. I mean, perfectly clearly. Well, let's switch to Scott Mooney, who's been in the LaRouche Youth Movement war room in liaison with organizers right in the states you were referring to, Paul. Michigan, you mentioned Genesee County and so forth, I think, and Indiana and Ohio. So, Scott, you had a delegation on tour through these states. Can you describe that?
Well, sure. Initially, this squad was down there to do a number of meetings, two actually, some speaking engagements, where they would have the opportunity to put forward to a public audience Lyndon LaRouche's legislation for saving the industry of the United States. One was a Democratic Club meeting, and another was a church that they were capable of speaking at. What happened with the war room, getting involved in this, is that we learned about public hearings that the Army Corps of Engineers was holding about the lock and dam infrastructure along the Ohio River, its decrepit status, and ideas for financing its rebuilding. Right now, the Army Corps is not getting a lot of funding for the projects that are desperately needed. The projects, the infrastructure projects have been okayed by the Congress, but no money, or not enough money, has been delegated to them. Now, one thing about these Army Corps of Engineer hearings is that they weren't publicized very widely. So when we learned about them, we realized we had a crew in Indiana, and we got them to extend their their road trip, you could call it, and go intervene at these meetings and deliver public testimony about Lyndon LaRouche's plan to save the automobile industry and to retool it for the construction of these infrastructure projects. And they were very happy to hear from us. In fact, out of the war room as well, we organized the building of the attendance to these meetings, which had been very poorly attended. And in a number of discussions over the phone with some of the public public affairs directors of the Army Corps, they learned that we were coming, and they were very happy to have people who were interested in their projects and in what they intended to do. So they were very happy to have us show up.
In fact, it's the case that in this organizing drive, you were saying you were making concrete. Sorry to use that in the case of dams and locks. That's what they're all talking about. The building trades. And other people, but whereas I think one of the six Army Corps of Engineers meetings from your reports had two people attending.
Sure, yeah.
The meeting that you're describing where the LaRouche Economic Recovery Act was discussed had 50.
50, right.
And also representative, this is part of the territory where over the last year there's been state and local city and state resolutions introduced that there ought to be auto retooling intervention by Congress the way that LaRouche mentioned, and one of the representatives came to present it.
Right. Catherine Barrett, who is a state representative out of Cincinnati, Ohio, a Democrat. Earlier this year, she was holding public hearings on exactly Lyndon LaRouche's program for saving the automobile industry, and that is retooling it for other functions, not just producing automobiles, but there's a whole number of things that this industry can produce. It's very versatile. She attended one of the events. She was recognized from the podium by a LaRouche representative who made the point that what Barrett was holding hearings on, the retooling, was exactly in line with what the Army Corps of Engineers had come here to do. And so it's this kind of process that we can do out of a centralized war room in the LaRouche movement, where we can really put into communication the kind of networks that would come together for this legislation that LaRouche and our movement is putting forward.
Well, I know some of the building trades that were involved in this mobilization to say, yes, the Army Corps project should be funded, the auto sector should be rejuvenized and saved. They, in particular, one gentleman said, well, I've never heard of Felix Rohan. I have heard of Lazard. Lazard is all over the place. I mean, it's a known name. And the person was quite ready to see that to find out more how this is the enemy operation at work. But Paul, back to you on what Scott has just said, and back to the question of Congress. On this retooling, you are also in touch with many people directly in the auto or other industrial base. Does Congress grasp what's involved in literally how you could use the auto capacity for these other purposes?
Well, grasp in one sense, yes. Grasp in the sense of grasp something and move it and act on it, no. The response that we get in the great majority of discussions with members of Congress, staffs of members of Congress, is that this legislation is to retool auto plants, to use them to build high-speed rail locomotives, cars, the overhead electrical apparatus for high-speed rail, the gates of lock and dam systems, assemblies for power plants, that this is a very, very good idea. And there are congressmen who would like to sponsor it. The problem is that they believe that there is an overwhelming consensus against it. And it's this consensus that we're putting the name Felix Roatan, Lazard Frères on that in order to make that name and those names radioactive on the basis of their having ruined industry after industry, bankrupt corporation after bankrupt corporation, as you cited, the guy, the building trades guy said, they're everywhere. They've been in everything that's gone down the drain industrially. They've been in it, pulling the drain cord, and down it goes. And we have to put that name to that consensus. This influence of Roatan, Lazard, especially in the Democratic Party, is the reason that Democrats as well as Republicans believe that globalization is inevitable, believe that outsourcing is unstoppable. Whether they consider it desirable or not, they believe they're supposed to consider it desirable because it has to occur. It's an automatic process of history, and it's a consensus. And because they believe that, this legislation seems like too big a step, far too big a step for them to take. And that they will be targeted in some way, even considered nuts, for proposing to create this volume of credit, to spend this amount of credit on infrastructure, on public works projects, and to protect industry and stop outsourcing, that they'll be targeted as crazy in some way if they step forward to do this. So all this overlays the fact that they say their first reaction is yes, this is very good. This would work, and it seems like it's necessary. And this is why they're not doing it. So the point of making Roatan and Lazard radioactive in the way that the LaRouche youth intervention at that manufacturing caucus on Wednesday did, and it caused, we know that it caused a very, very explosive reaction among the senators on the podium. The point of doing that is that otherwise it's not possible that a combination in the Senate and the House is going to step forward and actually do this legislation. As far as knowing it will work, they know it will. And as far as the most skilled workers in the auto industry and union representatives in the auto industry that we have talked to, they're totally confident that it would work, and that, as they always say, we can build if we're given a few months to retool, and blueprints, and an idea of the character of the element of the product we have to build, we can build anything. And that it is, people are generally not aware that the auto industry has not yet been shrunken and destroyed in the way that the textile industry, the steel industry, even the aerospace industry have. That up till this moment, till what's going on right this year, the auto industry has maintained more than 1 million productive employment. It has maintained its capacity with the slow process of shrinkage, but it's all that's left. So,
well, one of the reactions, Paul, you said that the auto workers themselves say we can build it. And, Scott, in Evansville, Indiana, at one of the meetings where the LaRouche Youth Movement attended, and there was discussion, is it the case that the carpenters or other building trades responded to LaRouche's Economic Recovery Act by saying not just public works, but we could add more factories? Is that part of the reaction you had?
Yeah. What they said is that they would love to build plants. They're getting, I mean, you know, public works are good, but they haven't built any new industrial plants in 7 years. Now, I think it's the case that these building trades representatives were, in fact, involved in the lock and dam infrastructure along the Ohio. I believe that's what they said. But after after LaRouche's representatives gave testimony, you know, these were some of the first people to come up and approach us, inquiring about the literature and wanting to stay in further contact with us.
Right. So, what about the other thing? Again, on this. Bringing pressure to bear in Washington, D.C. from around the country. Let me put it this way. On June 9th, when Mr. LaRouche gave a webcast in Washington, D.C. about the need to act now, the time is gone, we have to act now, and he stressed this, what people have to understand about the Nazi Felix Rohat and the influence of the Democratic Party. And his representative, Debbie Freeman, who is a spokesman for the LaRouche Political Action Committee, said that the reaction of Congress at the time to these revelations about Lazard, Felix Rohat, and the deliberate destruction of industry was, oh, my word, where are you going to get this out? You're going to keep it here in Washington, aren't you? Where else are you going to distribute this? So since June 9th, at least 100-some thousand of this. There's been 500,000 of the Emergency Economic Recovery Act that also names about. So let me just ask, Scott.
I believe 110,000 of the first of the two white papers on Rohat and Lazard were distributed, and 50,000 of the second have gone out so far.
So in a place like in some parts of the Ohio Valley, Indiana, the state of Ohio, and Cincinnati, these places, if you find auto workers, other productive workers ready to go, what was the discussion, Scott, anywhere at some of the Democratic Party meetings about Felix Rohat and or Lazard? What's happening?
Well, I mean, one is people just – Rohat is not a name that's known. And so if you can, especially with the unions, if you can put a name and a face and, you know, a conscious policy intent behind what they're facing, you know, they respond because it's something, now you know who your enemy is. Now you can organize to fight. The thing that we're getting, though, is we're getting a much better response from individual, you know, members of these unions, say at a lower level, than we are at the top. You know, a lot of these institutional layers, the leadership, like in the Congress, they're not yet ready to move. And the job of our movement is really to bring to bear the pressure. Of a massive movement around the country upon Congress and upon, you know, the other institutions of leadership to push these policies through. The one thing that we know about a lot of Democrats is that they're very open to what LaRouche is saying. They want to be FDR Democrats. They don't like this financial tyranny that is destroying their party. But they're scared. And so, you know, what we're doing is, well, I'll give you an example of one of the initiatives that we started in the war room. It's to get the constituents of every representative, you know, we're thinking big, to call in to the offices in D.C. and also the district offices and put forward Lyndon LaRouche's legislation, to call into these offices and demand meetings with LaRouche representatives to, you know, for us to lay out this plan. And we have, you know, four weeks left or so before Congress goes out of session, and, you know, we have our work cut out for us.
Right. Well, what I'll do is I have a program announcement to make, but before that, I want to ask if Paul wants to say anything else. I know Paul Gallagher has to move on, but you might want to – we have the July 20th webcast by Mr. LaRouche out of Washington, D.C. Is that right?
Yeah, that'll be the next major mass lobbying meeting in Washington, the meeting that was surrounded by mass lobbying of congressional offices, and the center of it will be an address by LaRouche broadcast over the Internet. There'll also be the opportunity for people to watch this at meetings, at subsidiary meetings around the country, in the Internet broadcast at 1 o'clock that afternoon. But a great deal has to be done before that, as Scott was saying, that by that time we'll be within a matter of only weeks, very short 2 or 3 weeks before this session of Congress will be ending in effect. So it's that mobilization of constituents in the congressional districts to demand this legislation in the meanwhile that will make that meeting really work, make it effective.
Thank you both very much. You're quite welcome to stay, but I'll tell everyone who's participating, this is the LaRouche Show. We are weekly. It's July 1st, 2006. And I invite everyone to call in to EIR. I'll give you the toll-free number. Otherwise, if you're on the website, you've got the contact information. But to make sure and get the latest dossier that we're describing here and plenty of the Emergency Economic Recovery Act of 2006, you dial 1-888-347-3258. That's 1-888-347-3258. And we'll be here July 8th, of course, from 3 to 4 every Saturday Eastern Time on www.larouchepub.com. That's LaRouchePub.com. Now, we want to continue on two things. We know we have on the line our Texas LaRouche Youth Movement representative, and also Tony Papert here in the studio has a lot of the dirt on exactly everything from today, the funding conduit network of literally Felix Rohatyn Foundation and who they're funding in the Democratic Party and all this and that, and also the pedigree going back decades, in fact centuries, of what this kind of evil is that we're up against. So I'm just going to turn to Tony and then ask for and then get a firsthand on-the-scene report from Texas from the organizing drive down there in a minute. So, Tony, where Paul left it and Scott describing the organizing on the ground in Indiana or Ohio, people have no idea that there's this degree of conspiracy.
Right, right. Just going back over that history, it was the early 2005, March or so, that LaRouche first raised the warning that General Motors could go bankrupt, and said that Congress must step in to ensure the preservation of this vital machine tool capacity in the auto industry and use it for other purposes besides just producing cars, such as vital infrastructure like railroads, nuclear power, and so forth that Paul mentioned. Now, at that time, in 2005, the Democratic leadership in the Senate, especially, was in general very responsive to LaRouche, and the Democratic leadership in the Senate was showing a good amount of leadership as a result or in connection with that. But that particular initiative from LaRouche, they didn't take up. And then we've had a change, unfortunately, in the Democratic leadership in the Senate, is basically the effective Democratic national leadership or misleadership of the country, over the year end, so that they've increasingly distanced themselves from LaRouche's leadership and really effectively sold out. I mean, as you can see in the way that John Kerry's bill to withdraw from Iraq within a year was handled. And it's interesting that
it only got, what, 11 votes?
11 plus the two co-sponsors. So 13 senators voted for it when I believe 23 had voted against the original Iraq War resolution, which is what, at the end of 2002. So in that period, apparently, they just, those who had decided in 2002 that the Iraq War was a bad idea have now seen in 2006 how good an idea it was. But it's really, it's what it is on one level that they're coming, of course, to the midterm elections and increasingly turning their view away from the lower 80% of income brackets of American families and looking increasingly toward the upper 10% and even the upper 2%, which will come through with the campaign contributions for television ads, which is the way they intend to do their campaigns. It's the wrong way. But the controller of that process for the Democrats is Felix Rowetton. What Felix Rowetton has done, for instance, is bankroll the Democratic Leadership Council. I know many of our listeners know exactly what the Democratic Leadership Council is. The Democratic Leadership Council is a submarine in the Democratic Party, led for a long time by Senator Joe Lieberman of Connecticut. It was a submarine, for instance, under Clinton administration for the impeachment of Clinton. It was the Democratic part.
It was a leader.
Yes, the Democratic part of the impeached Clinton movement. So Rowetton is a funder of that Democratic Leadership Council, and his general practice there as elsewhere is that he provides seed money, and others come in with a much bigger money. So Rowetton provided the seed money, I think about $100,000 over a few years recently, for the Democratic Leadership Council. And then the really big money came from the Bradley Foundation, which is one of the right-wing foundations which bankrolled the Clinton impeachment, along with the Heritage Foundation, the American Enterprise Institute, Spectator magazine, and all these organs which campaigned for Clinton's impeachment, among other things. So Rowetton, you know, is the leader of this movement to support the DLC as a submarine in the Democratic Party. Now, and I mean, the senators are frightened of him, frankly. Democratic senators are frightened of him. They say to us, out of fear, as Paul implied a minute ago, they say to us, well, you can't call somebody a Nazi. But the fact is they're scared out of their wits. And they know insofar as his ability to resort to physical force, violence, assassination, that he certainly is a Nazi. That's what they're afraid of. One reason they say you can't call him a Nazi. Now, I mean, this guy really is a Nazi, and it's not the kind of Nazi that people see in, you know, these Stalag 17, you know, reruns late at night or something like that, because it's only the lowest level of the Nazis who wear swastikas.
And has a mustache and does a salute.
Yeah, right, goon squads in the street. I mean, these goon squads in the street are controlled from a much higher level, as, you know, really all educated Americans once knew, but we now have younger generations who still have to learn it. The, I mean, the top level of the Nazi movement, not just Nazi, but the top level of the movement that introduced fascist governments into about 10 European countries between 1922 and 1945, I mean, even discounting the Nazi invasions per se, the top level of that movement was a secret committee of bankers, which U.S. intelligence, both Army intelligence and Naval intelligence, and the close friends of President Roosevelt called synarchism, or in Naval intelligence called synarchism Nazi communism. It was a secret bankers' committee centered in France and centered in the bank Lazare Frères, the bank which Rowetton headed for years in the United States until he was made ambassador to France, and the bank for which he worked for four decades. That was the center of the movement called the Syndicalist International, the secret bankers' committee that brought fascism to Italy, that brought Franco to power in Spain, which was not just a Spanish project. It was equally a French-Spanish project, and the project to bring Franco to power worked over the French-Spanish border that brought fascists to power in Austria, in Romania, in Portugal, and ultimately throughout Europe. What we've briefly documented in EIR is that it was basically a French-headquartered movement, Paris-headquartered movement out of Lazare Frères, Rowetton's bank, which was steered in conjunction with forces in London. I mean, Lazare has always been an international bank headquartered in Wall Street, Paris, London, all three of them simultaneously. And those links, Wall Street, Paris, London, were critical in the manipulation to bring the fascists to power in Europe and the Nazis in Germany. Here they were working with the Montague Norman, formerly the Bank of England, and Prescott Bush, the grandfather of the present president, who as an executive for Brown Brothers Harriman sent the funds from the U.S. to Germany by way of Britain, which brought Hitler out of election loss to become within a short time chancellor and then to become dictator. The head of Lazare in Paris until 1940, when he left as the Germans came in, was André Meyer, M-E-Y-E-R, who wound up in the United States in the 1940s, made himself head of Lazare Brothers Wall Street, groomed Felix Rowetton as though he were his son, which André Meyer said at one time, "I regard him as my son." André Meyer had a son of about Rowetton's age, but the son, for good reasons, didn't want to follow his father's footsteps, so had to pick up somebody else. As a virtual son, he groomed Rowetton to succeed him. This André Meyer was named by U.S. intelligence as one of the leaders of the Synarchy in France, which is no surprise because Lazare was its central institution. I mean, Lazare set up an offspring bank called Bank Worms, W-O-R-M-S, which still exists today. And still, it not only during the pre-Nazi invasion, Bank Worms was the headquarters of the French Nazis or the French fascists. It's slightly different from the German Nazis. It was the power behind the Vichy government of France once the Nazis had conquered France. I mean, people recall that they allowed a so-called sovereign French government in the southern part of the country while the Nazis occupied the north. So the power behind that so-called Vichy government, because its capital was the city of Vichy in southern France, was Bank Worms, as numerous U.S. dispatches from the period attest. These guys, I mean, just to finish, a very interesting story. I mean, one of their projects was to bring a domestic French fascist movement to power in France, but they could never do it. We've chronicled briefly, but we'll do it more fully, three attempts by the Synarchists around Bank Worms to pull off a Nazi coup or fascist coup in France between 1923 and 1938. They were never able to succeed. And finally, what they decided was, as much as they didn't like the Germans especially, but finally what they decided was that fascism can only come to France by way of a German invasion. We should facilitate the invasion. And that's what they did. They opened the doors to the Germans, as we've chronicled. And that was the mystery. People said, how could a great country like France fall to a Nazi invasion in 6 weeks? How is it possible? I mean, this is how it's possible. That's how it happened. These guys from within the officer corps and elsewhere, in an organized fashion, which has now all been documented, they deliberately opened the doors to the Nazi invasion of France. And now they're here.
Right. And that fifth column, I mean, that exposing that and so forth, I can't urge people enough who are listening today to make sure you look online at www.larouchepub.com or phone in or make sure you have these dossiers and get them everywhere. And with that, speaking of exposing this and eliminating it, in Texas, our person on the line has been part of a whole rejuvenation process of the Democratic Party there, and on tour this past week, Joe Rye. Do you want to just describe what you're doing by going around the state? I guess you're near San Antonio. You were out near Lubbock.
Yes.
Visiting with people, students or who?
Yeah. And we actually stayed with a lot of contacts that we've had for, 20 to 30 years, people who stuck around with Lyndon LaRouche because he just kept telling the truth about the situation. So these are people who we got to talk to, old farmers, ranchers, these type of things. And we found out a lot while going through these different cities up in the northwest of Texas here. It's a lot of land. And historically, we found out all these towns were really just, they were developed along the railway. And they developed as extremely productive areas with, not just cotton and beef like it is today, but they had, vast, different types of textiles and seeds and so forth. But going up there in this time of day, what's really tragic is that basically agriculture and production in this area are all dying off. And these farmers, they recognize it, but they stick to it because they love farming. So even though you had the same price for cotton, say for a pound of cotton 50 years ago that you have today, and you have to pay a lot more for diesel and these different types of things.
I think it's 49 cents a pound or something crazy.
Yeah, it was that same price 50 years ago. But look, if you look at what they're paying for today, when it comes to all the production costs that go into that, it's pretty wild. And another thing on the cotton, we used to actually produce our own clothes. But these days we ship 70% of our cotton production overseas, and then it's made into a finished product and sold back to us.
In India, probably, in Indonesia?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this was the British original intention, right?
Exactly.
Right.
Confederacy.
And so there's, a lot. We learned a lot about how that works. We also went to an old rancher. We went to a cattle drive-in. And we found out a lot about how they actually, the physical process that goes into actually producing what we actually eat. And one of the things about that, too, is back about 30 years ago, beef was about $1 a pound. That was a pretty good price. Today, they're getting $1.25 for a pound. But it costs so much more for everything, really. Trucks back then costed about $3,000 for a good truck. A good tractor, $35,000. If you want to buy a good truck today, it's quite a bit in any of these tractors. You're looking at $100,000 to $300,000, $500,000, $1 million. So these guys are all, it's really bad. And you have a huge drought, and some of these farmers, they're kind of just waiting for rain. They're hoping that they get one rain, and then if they do get, if rain does come down, Then they have to take the risk of planting the seed and hoping that another rain comes, so they can have a crop. So it's all just chance, just to get our food that we need.
Right.
And so it was really a stunning, kind of shocking to go out there and really see all this. One of the more optimistic points of this journey was that we got up in Lubbock at this Texas Tech University up there, where there's all these kids who are taking different agriculture, engineering, wildlife type of majors, and we go up there and set up a table, and we're singing and these things like this, and people coming around the table all day, very curious as to actually how to come. They're, you know, they're more conscious than maybe people in Houston or Seattle and these different areas where you don't have farming and production. So it's a really curious type of reaction to saving the auto sector. It's really a program. And a lot of people got very active. They ended up coming to a presentation that we had that night. And a couple of them would, you know, they're thinking about coming down and helping us out down in Houston.
Terrific.
So there's, you know, there's really good reactions that we don't normally get from universities where kids are just all out, wanting to just kind of join up with us. And another one of the things is we, with these different farmers, to just try to encourage them to organize the senators to really just keep fighting, that we can turn the situation around and really bringing them the solutions that we're actually going through, rebuilding these railway systems, bringing in the water from Alaska with the NWAPA water program. What we do is we actually been singing to these different people. We've been working on the development of polyphonic choral music for a while, and so there's four of us here, and so we got a four-part, like Ave Verum, we were singing that, the Felix Rohatyn canon, making fun of that guy, and people are really shocked by that, too, because I don't think they've ever really heard this kind of music before. So it really has a lasting impact, and they've really been moved a lot, and those people are becoming much more active now because of this. And so that was really the intention, to really get an understanding of what's actually going on physically in these areas and how can we mobilize these people to really help bring in these solutions around the auto sector and get this economy going again.
And let me ask you, it's the case, isn't it, that as far as labels, some of the people you may have met with, some of the ranchers may be Republican, not Democrat. They might have changed in the last 20 years, but that wasn't the fundamental question, right?
No, not at all. A lot of these Republicans, they up here, because you got a lot of them, a lot of the ranchers and so forth, they used to think they had it made. They're living it up, but, the reality is hitting them. I went through miles and miles and miles and miles and miles and miles of just empty droughted land, no water, no production.
Did you see some of the former irrigation systems? Sorry to interrupt, but this area used to be able to irrigate, but did they show you the water table going down or the wells problems?
Yeah. A lot of them weren't too conscious of exactly what the problem was. they're just, old farmers, we just, things are getting bad, but they're not really conscious as to why. They realize, that they're having water problems, these type of things, but they're not really sure. They're not really sure, what's the effect of globalization, these type of things. They don't like all this stuff, but they don't really know the solution. They don't really know what to do about it. They can complain, they complain a lot. Oh, they'll go off for quite some time, given, all the problems that they have, but they don't really know what to do about it. When we go through these different projects, they get a certain sense of, okay, you can do something about this. With the water table and everything, there wasn't really much recognition of the fact that the Ola-Galala aquifer is being drained out. Not too many people were so conscious of that.
Right. And did anyone ask, or were there many people interested in who could be deliberately bringing this about to the country, or that it didn't come up in that way? In other words, does it seem distant, or were they? Is this something that could become clear to people?
Well, because on the back of the pamphlet, it shows, you got Felix Rohatyn's signature right there, signing off on the bankruptcy of Delphi.
Yeah. People
don't know, and when they recognize that there are particular people who are controlling our institutions who are behind this, they do have a certain immediate reaction to it. And then we say, we're going to take these people down. We're going to destroy the oligarchy. And they get pretty excited about that.
Well, I can't help. You may have a question yourself, Joe Rye or Scott, but I've got to ask Tony, is it the case among the connections you began describing today that Tom DeLay's lobbying firm was the very same one of Lazard.
Yeah, yeah, correct. Alexander Strategies, which is in the delay, or it's now been, I think, dissolved because it couldn't keep going because it was in the midst of the delay crime ring. But that was Lazard's PR group for many years, I think for about two decades. Yeah, that's correct.
One thing, Joe Ryan, Texas, now you're probably still on the road, but following in recent weeks, we've had people on the show giving a report of the whole effort in the Democratic Party in Texas around the Keisha Rogers for Democratic Party state chairman that had such an impact there. But you might, what is your strategy in the way of Congress or where you're going to go next, or how have you mapped things out in the state?
Well, there was one man. His name is Charlie Arbina Jones, who is also running for state chair. This guy's been, you know, organizing a lot of the labor unions, these type of things. Those are the kind of people that we want to collaborate with across the state. I think he's centered here in San Antonio, somewhere around here, to actually have the type of massive outreach, especially for the Dallas, Austin, San Antonio and Houston area. These are the places we're going to be focusing on. As Scott said earlier, we are working with the War Room. We have mapped out the different county areas by zip code. Last night we had a night deployment here in San Antonio, and I was giving the number of the Congressman Charlie Gonzalez to the constituents so they can call him up and push this auto industry to get it through. We're basically, it's all coordinated to really push this through right now. And I think that we're just going to escalate with that type of drive. And with the Keisha campaign, you know, a lot of these networks, a lot of these people, the county chairman, we met up with a few on this journey up around this way who had been affected by her campaign. And we met up with some people even this morning at an intervention with the current man running for governor, Chris Bell. And a lot of these people are inspired by what we did and what we represent and are willing to move with us in the right direction to get some sponsorship, some endorsements. A city councilman I talked with today, he's going to be considering that. I'm going to be giving him a call probably in a couple of days and see if he would like to help mobilize the state to actually push for some type of resolution, these type of things, in the immediate future.
And, Scott, that's the same thing everywhere, right? Only, there's different local particularities, but is that what you would say?
Yeah, sure. One thing that Mr. LaRouche stressed before is that we're not going to focus on any particular group of senators or representatives, that there may be Democrats or, particular people that, you know, obviously would be more willing to support this bill. But if we're going to get this kind of legislation that Lynn's talking about, this retooling of the automobile industry and, this financing of major infrastructure development with credit, or the Army, the AmeriCorps, the NCCC grouping to train, our citizens that haven't done any kind of industrial work in the last 30 years, we're going to need to create what you might call a field in the Congress, a shift throughout the entire House of Representatives and Senate. And it's from that overall shift that you might get, a senator or a representative to step forward and do something. So we're focusing on not a small group, but everybody. We want to hit everyone.
Yeah, I know. I'll raise one thing for those following this and participating today. I think if you take the Ohio Valley and you look geographically, there are 18 congressional districts in 6 states right on the river. Now, that's a bit of a reductionist way to do things. On the other hand, they're there. They're in Congress. Some of these locks and dams are 80 years old. And if Congress wants to go to Washington and ignore everything, ignore these states that are having dozens of thousands of jobs eliminated within the next 2 months. Ohio has 6 plants shutting down. They have something like 12,000 jobs gone directly, and then a multiplier. That would be 30,000. It's just therefore, putting these offices, notifying them, is putting them on notice, I guess you could say.
Well, sure. And then you have, everyone who's on the front line of this economic collapse, the only solution that they're hearing is the one coming from us. And so we have a tremendous potential to recruit the citizens of this nation to this fight. And, you know, Congress is going to have to decide what side they're on. Are they going to be, you know, on the side of the general welfare to defend this nation, or are they going to step into a corner and be afraid of Felix Roatan and these other financiers?
Right.
Absolutely.
Well, do you want to add any more, Joe Rye, from wherever you are in southern Texas?
One of the things that the four of us, you know, reflected on quite a bit as we were going throughout these areas is some of these people that, you know, much older, World War II generation, like this first meeting, it was the county chairman of this county up by Post, which is about 45 minutes away from Lubbock. When we walked away from the meeting with him, he treated us to dinner and everything. What we didn't have is a real conception of how this man thinks. You know, what do we really know about him? And so from then on, we just really tried to get a certain understanding of, like, how these people are going about thinking about the situation, because they recognize a lot of the problems, and, you know, they get excited when we get into these solutions. But, you know, if we don't really, like, try to understand, you know, how this older generation, how these productive people really think about the world around them, then, you know, we're not really going to get too much action from them. If we understand their mind, and I guess this is kind of how we were thinking about it. If we understand, like, what these people are thinking, how they're going about thinking, then we can really find the ways to encourage them, and especially with a lot of these optimistic ideas about how we look at the future and what our potential is with these type of machine tool industries and capabilities. And we, you know, changing our thinking about that and everything, we started getting much different reactions from these people. It wasn't just that they were happy going away, but they were completely enthusiastic, and they called up our office in Houston, and so just a different reaction just by treating them differently, in a sense more human.
That's you're really tremendous.
Get a sense of their mind, and really, it's just different. So we really became more conscious of this during this trip, which is helpful.
It's wonderful.
Right. I don't know if there are any more cross questions. I have some otherwise. I mean, I think, Tony, we've on dossiers, we've had you on this show in recent years, especially to look at the crowd that intersects with how you get a man like Cheney still walking around God's earth. And Leo Strauss is one of the names interconnecting with the same networks you just described. But in the last minutes, let me just ask you on Dick Cheney and closing in on him, and what do you think that it's good for people to know or to remember about chances for getting, I don't know if you can get him out of the way, but to go to an undisclosed location and just stay there?
Yeah, well, the problem, frankly, is Roatan. You see that the very same senators who will bring up, as the Democratic Policy Committee did just a few days ago, which is basically the Democratic Senate leadership, they brought up one after another the intelligence community people who showed by their testimony that Cheney has to be impeached because he deliberately lied.
Right.
There was absolutely no question. There's also a movie, I forget the title of it. There's a movie that makes this point, and there's a new book.
Shadow.
There's a movie, Shadow. What is it? Well, that was a show, right? A TV show.
That's right.
And there's the book, The 1% Solution, by the guy who did. So all these, and these people brought up by the Democrats, they all show without question impeachable offenses. President Johnson did nothing compared to this. Even Nixon did nothing compared to this. And certainly Clinton. It is a completely different universe. Impeachable defenses. He lied to get the country into war. There's no question from that testimony. And furthermore, the grand jury that indicted Libby is, you know, the prosecution side is producing in the public domain, you know, almost weekly now, again, impeachable stuff against Cheney. But what we've got to do is to get action. We've got to get Rowerton out of there. We've got to make Rowerton a guy whom these Democrats will cease to associate with, because that's what's preventing them from action. They'll say a lot, but not do anything. Not
well,
now.
I think that ends the show on the note of marching orders. We've run out of time, and that's the right thing to say. And I want to thank everyone. This is the LaRouche Show, July 1st, 2006. And to Scott, Tony, and Joe Rye, thank you all for participating.
Thanks so much, Marcia.
And for July 8th, same time, same place, from 3 to 4 p.m. next Saturday. And do a lot of good this weekend of July 4th. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks.